Continuing Helen Wright's book, Mary Baker Eddy, God's Great Scientist, Volume 1.
It is our mistaken sense of life that brings the pain and sorrow. You say that she is dead. We buried her today. That is not true. You buried your belief of her, and you will some day resurrect it. The only reason why we cannot see our friends who have passed on is because of the limitation which mortal mind has put upon itself, unquote. Mrs. Eddy's letter to a bereaved husband. Let us rejoice with the angels today. Your dear wife, my precious student, has added one more to the glad throng and the sweet song of those who've gone up thither, having washed their robes and made them white through all they have experienced. While in the sweet sense that she now entertains, she knows there is a life in God good that is eternal, and in this life no pain, no death, no parting, no night there. Oh, my dear friend, I wish you and I knew this as well as she does today, who has awakened, as we all must in some way, to the truer sense of the love that gives us this alternative. You have no cause for grief. There is no change in the fact and reality of your relative existence, only as the old impressions of death and parting linger in thought. Now, dear brother, dismiss these. They are as unreal as the false sense of sickness and of sin. They do not belong to God or his creations, and you are the master of all that worketh or maketh alive. You will learn, as did Jacob when he said, "All these things are against me," that they are for you, and the footsteps by which God is calling you more absolutely away from the falsities of sense and flesh, into an entire surrender to divine science, and the imperative call, "Leave all for me, go work in my vineyard," unquote. Spiritual Awakening. Body Held in Thought. Under the marginal heading, Spiritual Awakening, Mrs. Eddy writes, "Humanity advances slowly out of sinning sense into spiritual understanding. Unwillingness to learn all things rightly binds Christendom with chains." She also says that divine science is absolute and permits no halfway position in learning its principle and rule, establishing it by demonstration. To advance rapidly, she told her students, they must cut off every offending thought or motive that is not truth. In Science of Man, she asserted, "If you were truly scientific, you would have no sensation or demand in your body. This would all be confined to soul, and there love would be purity and an unselfed principle, blessing to be blessed. And food would be understanding, such as Jesus brake or gave to those to whom he taught God. And being thus, you would have the same form or body as now, only it would be spirit and not matter or substance. We shall one day awake to be the likeness of God." From experience, Mrs. Eddy knew that forgetfulness of self and unself love takes you into the principle. "The foundation of all she is teaching in Science of Man," she says, "is the unseen truth, which all theories have failed to discover, namely that man is shadow idea, as Christ Jesus demonstrated when he reproduced his body from its eternal principle. Jesus held his body immortal in truth and in science. He held it as the phenomena of its principle. In other words, the idea of the principle and the shadow of himself. He reckoned himself as the principle and as the substance. Knowing his body as shadow, as idea, he could walk on the water and be instantly on the other side. His healings illustrate the science Mrs. Eddy discovered and taught. 'Take up thy bed and walk' was not demanded of body, shadow, but of the principle, as was the raising of Jairus' daughter, the restoring of the dead son to the widow of Nain, the healing of the epileptic boy, and the many others." Impression on students. Georgine Millmine interviews. In 1907, Georgine Milmine set out to write derogatorily of Mrs. Eddy in Life magazine. Nevertheless, her articles were sprinkled with occasional honest reports, such as Daniel Spofford's account telling of reading his wife's copy of Mrs. Eddy's, then Mrs. Glover's, handwritten manuscripts of Science of Man. This manuscript the students were supposed to study diligently and even commit parts to memory. Spofford was intrigued and deeply moved by what he read, but when he later actually enrolled in a class with Mrs. Eddy, he told Georgine Milmine that, quote, "the wonderful manuscripts nevertheless were compared to Mrs. Glover's expounding of them as the printed page of a musical score compared to its interpretation by a master," unquote. According to Milmine in Life magazine, the students she interviewed, even those long estranged from Mrs. Eddy, still declare that what they got from her was beyond equivalent in gold and silver. They speak of a certain spiritual or emotional exaltation which she was able to impart in her classroom, a feeling so strong that it was like the birth of a new understanding and opened for them a new heaven and a new earth, unquote. The power of Mrs. Eddy's teaching is borne out in the realization that of even the unpromising material constituting her earliest classes, some of her pupils became full-time practitioners and were adequately supported by their practice for the rest of their lives. This was the fact, even though they ignobly turned against their teacher in a faithless show of who shall be greatest. Later classes attracted students of nobler and loftier stature who remained loyal and spread Christian Science to the far corners of the earth. Hanover P. Smith was one such student. On leaving Mrs. Eddy's class, he wrote, "We go forth from this unfolding truth and intelligence with elastic hope and strong convictions, and we are ravished with the sunshine and gladness. The mind, waking from its dream of non-realities, springs to power. In this sudden surprise of might, there opens to the student's mind new possibilities with a dazzling consciousness of the greatness of possible achievement." Unquote. Class of 1870 not building timber. But the early class of 1870 bore little fruit. Within 12 years, all the members of that class fell away. None were of the caliber from which a new scientific healing movement could be built. In the testing, their inner timbers began almost at once to come apart. Actually, Mrs. Eddy's first 16 years of teaching and healing netted her not one student strong enough to withstand the insidious pressures of animal magnetism. Mr. Bancroft, however, as one of the class of 1870, never became antagonistic. He simply lacked the needed stamina to outface the upcoming storms. Under pressure from Mrs. Eddy, he twice made plans to set up as a scientific practitioner. The first plan was interrupted by his decision to marry. When he so advised Mrs. Eddy, he received from her the following rare response, in which one feels a pervasive sense of poignant regret. The cause at this time sorely needed good practitioners to whom she could refer calls for help. Quote, "Dear student, your brief letter lies before me, and I have no objection to your decision to marry because I know experience is the best teacher, if this experience be not bought too dearly. I would advise you to meet with and converse with the class. You say you are vanquished, but this is an error of statement. You are unchanging. This, Mr. Bancroft, is not. You say love has triumphed over wisdom. This cannot be, for love and wisdom are one. But you might have said sense has overruled the soul for a brief time. Ere long the case will be changed, and you will wish this had not been the case. I fear you will inherit this truth through your discipline of affliction." Unquote. When Bancroft finally did establish himself in the early part of 1875, he held out only a short time, and then wrote that because of an increase in his family, he felt he must seek more lucrative employment. This, of course, was another bitter disappointment to Mrs. Eddy. She saw Bancroft's innate goodness. She had hoped he would stand, that he would have waged a livelier battle with the three-in-one error, the material world, the flesh, and the devil. Writing in 1923, 53 years after he sat in Mrs. Eddy's class in 1870, Bancroft tells of the joy and happiness of the little group, despite some defections and the harsh sentiments with which they were regarded. Quote, "We were considered much the same as holy rollers, or the howling dervishes are today. We did not even have a name. To be sure, we were students of moral science, but moralists could not be saved, according to the prevalent idea of those who claimed to be Christians. And when the name Christian Science was adopted, we were deemed sacrilegious, and Mrs. Eddy a dangerous woman." Unquote. Dedication to students. Mrs. Eddy never failed to share with her students such additional wisdom as was revealed to her from divine principle. Nor did she miss an opportunity to encourage and promote the welfare of her students. In this way, she carried out her determination and conviction that the science could be taught regardless of the inauspicious material she had to work with in the beginning. While her course of instruction consisted of only 12 lessons, her pupils were never really graduated. Students have left testimonial that every meeting with her was a lesson, as was every letter received from her, and that this continued for years. There is no record that any of her loyal students, or even her disloyal ones, ever complained of not receiving full value for the tuition they paid. Obedience. Being not only an idealist, but also a constructive leader, she could at times be stern and unyielding when error needed to be routed. The science she taught required obedience. Obedience to Mrs. Eddy meant not to look to the human mind or to matter for a single thing, but to look to God, mind, infinite good, the principle, the kingdom of God within consciousness, for everything. To do less, she maintained, is to imply that there is lack in God, that the divine principle love is not sufficient to meet every human need. We are obedient when we realize we are partakers of an inheritance in which there is no division of estate, and joyfully accept the legacy, never looking to matter or human personalities for help. As we go out from the allness of divine good, we are shown the human footsteps to pursue, and sometimes these footsteps may look like material means, but if we are obedient to our highest sense of right, we will be led to a principled solution. In his recollections of Mary Baker Eddy, Gilman, writing on obedience, records, "In speaking of obedience, Mrs. Eddy referred to her publisher, William Nixon, as embodying a general feeling of unwillingness to obey her implicitly as a little child. She represented him in this as being in the attitude of mind to feel it beneath him to obey her because she was a woman. Quote, he would declare himself ready to obey God in whatever he might require of him, but to obey a woman, bah, unquote. Continuing, she said, we understand God and are ready to obey him only so far as we understand and are ready to obey his highest representative in mortal life. Our love for God and consequent willingness to obey him is never greater than our love for and willingness to obey his highest demonstrator." Unquote. In all her dealings with her students, Mrs. Eddy tried to bring self-will to the surface in order to destroy it. She saw that a student must be rid of self-will and willing to let God's will be done if the student was to make spiritual progress. Her rebukes were always from God and were spoken from the highest motive because she saw the error of a student's words and actions. But these rebukes were often misunderstood by self-willed mortals. A rebuke was sometimes in the form of a question. One day Mrs. Eddy asked a student, "Are you working?" He began to tell of his hours of study and work. She asked, "When you see old age, do you declare that life is eternal activity, beauty, and joy? When you see the leaves falling and hear the winds blow, do you declare there is no change, decay, or cold? When you see deformity and disease, do you declare that man is made in the image and likeness of God? The student answered, "Mrs. Eddy, I am not working." Unquote. Understanding brings freedom. Mortals will soar to final freedom and rest from the subtlety of speculative wisdom and human woe. Unquote. Mrs. Eddy emphasized that freedom comes with understanding, seeing man's present divinity. Quote, "In beginning with a patient, one must see the spirituality of his being, and then be fortified to deny the beliefs with understanding. If you were in a house that had caved in, you would keep on working until every timber was removed which kept you from freedom. So you must see all that holds the patient is removed and has no power to hold. Man is free, and freedom is the God-given birthright." Unquote. She taught her students that they heal the patient by healing themselves first. Then they could not be mesmerized to see discord. She had seen the laws on which the science of mind healing was founded. These laws made obsolete any reasoning from a matter basis, or from any basis other than the one mind, which is love always. In countless ways, Mrs. Eddy emphasized the necessity for bringing to light the real man, the true man, in place of the caricature presented by the physical senses. Numberless times she returned to the basic difference between the Christ man revealed by divine science and the mortal conception of man. Restoration to our original perfection as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, which is the standpoint of the first edition, comes only through a transformation of our consciousness. As the truth of Mrs. Eddy's writings is assimilated, spiritually understood, we are translated out of a material sense of everything into a divine consciousness and a spiritual sense of everything. Since God is not a person, but a principle, God is divine principle. We get answers in Christian Science only as we understand the divine principle of our being. The principle which must be learned, for example, must be made our being through the study of our leader's writings. This is what we learn through the system, hence the necessity for it. This principle, which is love, must be practiced. Her writings reveal her successor. We are that successor, as we become one with the teachings contained in her writings, and they become our divine being. God is individual mind. This one mind and his individuality comprise the elements of all forms and individualities, and prophesy the nature and stature of Christ, the ideal man. The principle of mathematics cannot be divided. God is the mathematician. No part is withheld from God's image and likeness, God's reflection, man. Since one infinite principle, mind, God, can have but one infinite reflection or expression. In her classes, Mrs. Eddy made it clear that the one mind, which is love, was already the mind of each one, and only awaited the student's recognition. Evil, unreal, her unique discovery. But the world did not crown the power of mind as the Messiah. Matter is this world's God, and, quote, "How contemptible is mind groveling at the feet of matter," unquote, Mrs. Eddy wrote in Volume 1 of the Christian Science Journal. Mrs. Eddy was the first in human history to explain evil as totally unreal, as the counterfeit of God, nothing more than a misrepresentation of the divine, ever-present, infinite good called God, as a misunderstanding of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. As discoverer and founder, She could not teach what our true being is without teaching what it is not. She asks, can a mother teach her child the correct numeration of numbers and never name a cipher? Knowing that she cannot do this in mathematics, she should know that it cannot be done in metaphysics. And so, she should definitely name the error, uncover it, and teach truth scientifically. Cruel and bitter personal experiences caused Mrs. Eddy to plumb the very depths of evil, to find out that it was merely an unreal facade, behind which was always infinite good as the reality. While Mrs. Eddy's great discovery revealed the unreality and nothingness of evil, since God good was revealed as all and all in all, it nevertheless took many decades to fully investigate how evil operated. Christian Science had to go to the bottom of mental action and reveal evil's total unreality. She saw that the universe and man, when explained on the basis of physical sense and represented as subject to growth, maturity, and decay, must continue to be a puzzle, a riddle wrapped in a mystery, inside an enigma. She proved that man and the universe can be understood only when interpreted by science from its divine principle, God. How does evil stack up when viewed correctly? When interpreted from the science point of view, what looks like mortal mind, like life, substance, intelligence, and matter, or what she termed animal magnetism, is never an entity. It is never anything but a misinterpretation of the one divine mind. When rightly viewed, what looks like evil, the mingling of spirit and matter, or dualism, the flesh, spirits many, is never an entity, never real being. It is nothing more than the misinterpretation of reality, of the one and only spirit, God. When understood from the science point of view, what to a mortal sense looks like sin, sensation in matter, the body with its suffering and pain, its bondage to appetite and lust, is never a right identification. It is always a counterfeit of the true and real identity, which is soul, the divine ego, the unchangeable immortal, and only I or us. Looking from the science point of view, Mrs. Eddy saw that personal sense, material organization, discord, dishonesty, material theories, were never the operation of divine principle, were never anything other than false teaching, no more real than discord in mathematics or any other so-called scientific subject. Looking from the science point of view, she saw that death and time were not realities, but mere suppositional opposites of the ever-presence and isness of life. From the science point of view, an adversary, resistance to truth, disease, error of any kind, was never an entity in itself, but always the counterfeit, the suppositional opposite of truth. From the science point of view, fear, hate, envy, imperfection are only the misunderstanding of love and perfection. They are never real. Matter, or false consciousness, is the way the human mind represents itself to itself. The body, like everything else material, is merely a construction of consciousness. And, as consciousness changes through spiritual education, the body will be seen as spiritual, as a body of divine ideas. Science translates matter into its original language, which is mind, and gives the spiritual instead of the material signification. Where did sin come from? Where did discord in music come from? Where do errors in mathematics come from? When error is handled, Mrs. Eddy told a student, it becomes a battle axe. But a single wrong thought, harbored, she contended, makes one a partner with animal magnetism and opens the door to bondage of evil. Mrs. Eddy's discovery that evil is unreal is unique in human history. It is destined to set man free from believing matter is an entity in itself. She saw that it was not mortal man that was wrong, but only the concept of man as mortal. This was not theory with Mrs. Eddy. She had proven it to be truth in actual experience. She taught her students that their understanding of Christian Science was God working in them. How did error creep in? Decade-long nightmare begins. Mrs. Eddy had a strong penchant for endowing others with her own Christ-like qualities, for investing others with her ideal, and making them think it was their own. She was ever thinking of others as bigger and better than they really were, humanly. This predisposition kept her, in 1870, unaware of the deep moral deficiencies in young Richard Kennedy, a student in that 1870 class, to whom she had given many hours of private tutoring in the healing art. Kennedy's consequent success with patients led her to make an arrangement with him whereby she did the teaching and he got on with the healing. The brash young Kennedy soon decided he knew as much as his teacher, and, motivated by envy, he proceeded to use in a wicked, perverse way the divine mind power Mrs. Eddy had taught him. When uncovered, he became vengeful and used a perverted mind power to influence students against Mrs. Eddy. Students began falling away, and some began aggressively to oppose her every move. Thus began a decade-long nightmare, which, however, proved to be not without a hidden blessing. What was this blessing? The question might arise, since Mrs. Eddy taught her students only the power of infinite good, how did it happen that she now found her worst obstacles, the most devastating blows, as Jesus had learned from Judas, were to come from her own defecting students, rather than from the rejection and skepticism that assailed her from the outside world? Apparently God wanted Mrs. Eddy to thoroughly learn that the only enemy is animal magnetism, meaning a false view of things. The treachery of her students thus became a blessing in disguise, since they forced her to investigate and discover the remedy for error of every kind. Jesus' mission had been an ascending mission, to show mankind how to lay down the mortal concept. He knew there is but one self, and that this is the God self. Consequently, he said, "Think not that I am come to send peace on the earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword." Mrs. Eddy's mission, on the other hand, was a descending, encompassing mission. It encompassed Jesus' work on earth. She therefore had to find the remedy for error of every kind. She had to find that reality, divine love, has no contests, because to infinite, ever-present love, all is love, and there is no error. Regarding error, Mrs. Eddy states, "While the ways, means, and potency of truth had flowed into my consciousness as easily as dawns the morning light, this was not the case with evil and error. These she seems to have had to ferret out, mostly from necessity, through raw, harsh experiences that left her worn and battle-scarred. Quote, I shall not forget the cost of investigating for this age the methods and power of error, the metaphysical mystery of error, its hidden paths, purpose, and fruits at first defied me." Unquote. The early editions of Science and Health show how Mrs. Eddy only gradually came to a full understanding of evil and how to handle it. In the first edition, she said, "In warfare with error, you attack to kill, and the wounded or cornered beast bites you if he can." Unquote. Whereas in the last edition, she succinctly disposes of evil in five words. "Evil is a suppositional lie." Unquote. Because of the exaltation of God in her consciousness, she saw evil's unreality. But to search out and establish the total nothingness of evil took Mrs. Eddy's entire 44-year span of labor. The missions of Jesus and Mrs. Eddy are really one mission. Jesus embodied within himself the Christ and showed forth in his own being the presence of God as the personal appearing of truth. Since at his time on earth no other appearance could have been understood by the people, he therefore could say, "He that hath seen me hath seen the Father." Mrs. Eddy's mission was not to repeat, but to complete his mission. Her mission was to so commune with mind that she could write the textbook, The Comforter, which gives the complete impersonal explanation of God. She entirely and consistently removed herself, her personality, from the science she discovered, knowing that confusing her with Christian Science would destroy a genuine understanding of it. She said, "I got Mary out of the way." She knew there was never a religion or philosophy lost to the centuries except by sinking its divine principle in personality. Unquote. Jesus was our great exemplar. He made it clear that he was doing nothing beyond what all others were capable of doing and could do. Quote, "He that believeth on me, the works that I do, shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do." Unquote. But until Mrs. Eddy brought the understanding of God and Christ Jesus, faith was the highest form of help the hungering heart could turn to.